Novak Djokovic, Roger Federer, Serena Williams, Maria Sharapova. Global sporting stars with an Aussie contingent on the rise. Playing to fans on every continent, from London to Paris to New York. Featuring players from nearly 200 countries, playing for over $100 million in prize money. And a share of it right here in Australia's sporting capital, with one of four majors played at Melbourne Park.
Serena puts it out wide. It's this time. This time it's good from Serena Williams. And she wins her sixth Australian Open title here on Rod Laver Arena.
Yeah, I just really can't believe it. I really can't.
Yeah.
There's Djokovic. Goes out wide. Lunging forehand. Now he goes straight towards Murray's forehand. Djokovic wins the Australian Open because Murray goes straight into the net. And he looks to the heavens here, Novak Djokovic. He is the king of Melbourne Park. There is no doubt about it.
If we didn't have a love and passion for this sport, we wouldn't be here. So all these results and achievements are incentive and motivation more for me to keep on going.
This is the First Serve, talking tennis on 1116 SEN.
Morning, everyone. 7 minutes after 11. Good to be back in the chair. Thank you to Darren Park. And filling the shoes last week, Brett Phillips, we've got the first lady back because we were both off duty last week. Charlotte James, nice to have you back, CJ.
It's good to be back, Brett.
Indeed, we've got a busy show. We've got a very special guest.
We've got a star-packed show
coming up
today,
in just a moment, right? Because the topic of this week has been Leighton Hewitt when it comes to the world of tennis. So the man who's inside the Hewitt camp knows everything about Leighton Hewitt, right from the start of his career to the end, which is coming up at the Australian Open, but far from finished with Australian tennis. He'll be involved for some time to come. We're in Basel this week. We're in Valencia. The WTA finals in Singapore. We'll get across there. Also, the girls, not the top eight, but those ranked 9 to 20 in Zhuhai in China, coming up on Tuesday. That starts. They're playing for about $2.75 million. And we'll chat to Peter Johnston, well-known CJ, used to walk the corridors of Tennis Australia, worked for the WTA, now has set up his own sports consultancy business. And as we know, tennis is just booming in Asia.
Absolutely. It seems to be the place to expand at the moment, doesn't it? Obviously, a lot of Australian Open activity happening there in certainly in January to come. There's a lot going on. Social media, they're really expanding into that with WeChat and Weibo. And, you know, the Australian Open's really, really leveraging that geographical location.
No doubt. 77 days, 22 hours, 53 minutes until Australian Open 2016. And, of course, one of our co-hosts, not here today, but he's been at Traralgon all week, Paul Aiken. We'll get to him a little bit later on. It'll be Ebden v. Thompson, the final coming up today. In fact, Jordan Thompson, who's had a very good sort of last 3 or 4 months in particular, wins today. Could get some very good rankings points as he gets closer to the top 100. And for Matty Ebden as well, a chance for him to get closer to maybe getting back inside where he was a few years ago. So a bit at stake for the number one and two seeds in Traralgon. It looks like the weather might turn a little bit nasty this afternoon.
Well, it's been blowing a gale, hasn't it, I think, all over Victoria. And, it's so great, I think, for the Aussie players that the Pro Tour, you know, really starts to ramp up now. So in the lead-in to the Australian Open, you have all of these tournaments, you know, they're playing in the conditions which certainly are building up to the kind of conditions that we're going to be experiencing in January. It's a bit patchy at the moment, be fair to say. But, you know, it's a great opportunity for the Aussies and also for international players to come over and just really kind of bolster their rankings.
Absolutely. Well, at 10 past 11, let's welcome in our special guest.
Yeah, no, really excited, obviously. Changing over now from, leading the team as a player to now in the captain's position and really trying to help these guys, not just the Davis Cup weeks, but obviously be a mentor for them the whole year round as well. We've got a lot of talented kids out there and trying to make that next transition now to hopefully get into the top 20, top 10 and really push on for the Davis Cup, but also for Grand Slam titles as well.
The voice of Leighton Hewitt. He had a chat to Marco on the Ox on the run home on Tuesday, of course, becoming Australia's latest Davis Cup captain. No great surprise. He was the man that we all touted to be the next in the chair, and he will lead by example next year. Our first tie, of course, against the United States of America. Great to welcome in David Drysdale, who's always been good enough when we've been doing this show, CJ, over the summer to pop in and have a chat to us. He's been managing Leighton for a long time. Great to see you, David, and a fantastic appointment during the week.
Oh, pleasure to be here, Brett and Charlotte.
something that Leighton's incredibly passionate about, something he's wanted to do. And as one of his mates said to him, he's after 34 years, he's finally got a real job.
He is actually an employee now, isn't he? Which I'll say.
That's exactly right. Yeah, employee of Tennis Australia. But look, I think that Leighton had to go through the process that Tennis Australia implemented to get the captaincy, and I thought that was really good for him because he made a very professional presentation to the committee. And I think that showed how passionate he is about the job and how much he has researched, what he knows what's ahead of him, and he's really looking forward to it.
I would argue that there's possibly, well, certainly there's no living Davis Cup player who has been more committed to that team format than Leighton, possibly in history, but certainly no living player who's given more to Davis Cup, you know, put more into it. What's behind that passion for Leighton? Is it the team environment? What is it that kind of sparked in him?
I think there's, a lot of it goes back to the days of Newcomb and Roach when he was an Orange boy, and they showed him what it was to be a Davis Cup player and how important it was to represent your country and be proud of that. But it's obviously his football background from his father and his grandfather. So the team environment and the opportunity to play for his country as a team.
You talked about the process. I mean, there was a bit of commentary on it throughout the year. I mean, we sort of go back to January and February when Pat resigned, Wally stepped in, and everyone was speaking then that, well, Leighton will be in charge in 2016. There was some criticism that, well, hang on, you're sort of anointing him without having some sort of interview process. Tell us what actually transpired, as much as you can tell us, Dave, that's seen him now officially be put in place.
Yes, well, he was actually announced in January as being the successor after Wally. In any sport, there's a few factions out there, and some people weren't happy that there was no process gone through with regards to the appointment of Wally, but considering everything behind the scenes that was going on, it was a good appointment to put Wally in there. So then Tennis Australia decided that, the board of Tennis Australia decided they wanted to have a process to be more transparent as to how they're appointing the Davis Cup captain. The good thing about Leighton is he's has the support of everybody, mm-hmm. on every faction. As Charlotte said, people don't question his commitment and his desire for Davis Cup. But again, it was good for him to go through the process and understand that that's what people have to do if they want a job. And I thought it was good for him. And he came through with flying colours. He's still playing. He's going to play the Australian Open as his final gig, but all he can talk about at the moment is Davis Cup.
I don't think there's anybody really that could legitimately question his suitability that role. Hmm. But what attributes make him great for that role, Dreiser? What's he going to bring to that role?
Well, I think the big thing at the moment is the people that are going to be playing Davis Cup for Australia, the Nick and Bernie and Thanasi and Grothy, and then you've got the younger guys like Omar coming through. Leighton has a fantastic relationship with this group of players, and he's actually relevant to them. It's a funny thing, but with today's generation, you need to be relevant. And so they've seen what Leighton does. They know what he does. They see how hard he trains. And as good as what Pat Raft has been and John Fitzgerald and all these guys, they're not actually relevant to today's generation. So I think he brings something there. And his the strengths that Leighton had to get through to being a champion tennis player are probably the weaknesses that the other boys have. So it's a matter of trying to transfer those across.
And he's clearly enjoying taking on this sort of mentoring role, older brother, whatever you want to call it. And we're all intrigued as to, what is going to become of Bernard Tomic, Nick Kyrgios. I think we're a little bit more certain about Thanasi Kokkinakis from what I can see, David. Sam Groth, who I've got to know really well, I think we've all enjoyed his journey, that he's made the most of his talent in his mid to late 20s. He's had a really, really good crack at it. I love the Milman story. I mentioned young Jordan Thompson coming through. There's Alex Bolt. There's a few others. Luke Saville, who's been in the system for a little while now. So it's a great time, isn't it, in Australian tennis? And I suppose the timing is so good here for Leighton to play such a big role to get the absolute best out of all those players.
There's no doubt about that, and Leighton is focusing on the upside of these guys, not the downside that the media often focus on, yep. but the upside of these boys, and he can have a real positive influence on these guys, and you know, things like fitness, working hard in every point, never giving up, they're the sort of attributes that Leighton wants to get into these guys. I can tell you now that none of those boys are really fit. Sam Groth is probably the one that's improved the most, and that's due to his fitness. So if we can get some fitness into these other boys, yeah, the world's their oyster. In 3 or 4 years' time, we could have a real champion Davis Cup team, as well as maybe 3 or 4 guys in the top 10 in the world. And Leighton's there for the long haul. He's not focusing just on these boys. He's going to be looking at the generations below that as well.
I was going to say, I mean, we got incredibly close to making the final this year. You know, what's the potential and what's the time frame?
Yeah, we were very close this year, and we didn't play one tie with our strongest team. So, look, I think that a lot depends on the draw. You know, we've got a tough draw first up. We're playing US at home. It's good that it's home, but then you've got to work out which is our best surface, considering the boys that we've got, and they're pretty good on all surfaces. So a lot, you know, comes down to the draw, but I think that it's going to be a work in progress. I think that these boys are still 2 or 3 years away from really maturing. I think Bernard has just turned the corner and looking really good. Nick's probably got another 2 or 3 years to mature. He could be number one in the world. He's that good. I think that Leighton's looking at probably a 2 or 3 year term with these guys.
So just on Kyrgios, I ask you from this perspective, because our SEN audience is all sports, so he came and he has been. David, and you're probably listening to SEN from time to time. He's been an easy target for people who criticise the way he goes about it. We've all seen Leighton sit courtside at various matches trying to work with him. Give us your own take on the role that Leighton can play going forward and where you actually see Nick Kyrgios, because he does polarise people, and you've got a sort of a more internal tennis view on it, I suppose.
Oh, for sure. And probably Leighton polarised people when he was 19, 20 years of age. Look, Nick's a different character. He's got a lot of flair. You certainly don't want to take that out of him. He's actually a really nice kid. I've got a lot of time for Nick. I think that Leighton can help him from the point of view of, like I said, his fitness, which will help his mental application. And then showing Nick that, hey, you don't have to be liked, but there's a way you can go about it and you can change things around. And I think that if he's got the right people around him that are mentoring him, as maturity comes along, I think Nick can turn around. I think Nick can be absolutely anything he wants to be.
Dreiser, just to go back to Leighton, and I guess, you know, looking post-January, which I think is going to be a hugely emotional event, I think, Australian Open, and the whole of the AO series, really, everywhere that Leighton plays, I think, you know, the fans are getting geared up to support Leighton, and it's going to be a massive thing. But then, you know, after that Davis Cup, is he going to keep commentating? What are his other kind of plans? Because, you know, I think he surprised a lot of people with his screen presence and his commentary as well.
Yeah, look, to be honest with you, he's focused on Davis Cup as being a 12-month gig. Where he's going to be helping these boys at tournaments on the tour around the world. He wants to work with the boys, be at tournament. He wants to look at what's coming through, the next generation. He's really focused on Australian tennis. With regards to commentary, he'll do some with Channel 7 during the Open, but he's not looking at that's a path that he wants to go down. He's more focused on what can he do for Australian tennis. To turn Australian tennis around and really get it going again.
David Drysdale, our special guest here on the First Serve. Squeeze into break. More inside the final stages of the Leighton Hewitt career, and a lot lies beyond. It's a pretty exciting time, and we'll take some calls throughout the hour as well. 9429 1116. We'll cover all the results going on the men's and the women's tour. Plenty to talk about here on the First Serve.
On 1116 SEN, you're listening to The First Serve, talking tennis, building up to the Australian Open 2016.
We certainly are. We love doing it every Sunday morning. Brett Phillips and the First Lady is here, Charlotte James. And we've got David Drysdale, of course, the manager of Leighton Hewitt, announced as the latest Australian Davis Cup captain during the week. So we've sort of touched on what might lie ahead for him next year, but clearly, David, I mean, he's going to have a role in tennis for many, many years to come, and that might start with the Davis Cup captaincy, whether it's coaching, there was some commentary, mentoring. I mean, he becomes such a pivotal figure.
Yeah, well, I guess he's been on the tour for 18, 19 years, so it's a lot of experience that he brings to the table and been at the very top. So he had a lot of offers for coaching, but he was really focused on the Davis Cup position because he wants to help Australian tennis. He wants to help the young boys that are there at the moment and the people coming through. And like I said, he sees it as a long-term scenario, not just a hit-and-run type thing.
Yep.
So what do you think it's going to be? I'm kind of obsessed with January, I have to say. I mean, I've loved Leighton since he was number one in the world.
Just
so
a spring and Charlotte step is amazing. Honest,
well, no, not, I'm not really, because I don't want him to retire. I want to play forever.
No, just your love of, just your love of January.
January. That really puts a spring in my step. It's a massive thing, I guess, for a player who's played for as long as he has, you know, been at the top of the world rankings, all of these things. Is he just going to, you know, he'll play his last match there. Has he set this Davis Cup up? Do you think, you know, that he can just sort of step straight out of playing into that role so that there's not a big kind of, I guess, you know, it's like a big wrench, isn't it, to stop playing?
Yeah, it's an interesting scenario. Like, even though he's coming up to his 20th Australian Open, 20 in a row, which is quite amazing within itself. And one little stat there, he played his first match on court 3, and he's played every singles match since then on Rod Laver Arena, which is quite amazing. But the thing is that he's still training for that event like he trained for it 10 years ago when he was a chance to win it and he lost to Murat in the final. So the application of the mind and the competitiveness of Leighton, he's still going out there to give it his absolute best. So he is a competitive beast. He's got to keep those juices going. But the Davis Cup captaincy is something he's talked about now for 5 or 6 years, that's what he wants to do. So it's a good transition for him. So he's still involved in the tennis. He's still part of it. But it's probably going to be tough for him to sometimes watch matches and think, you know, come to the doubles at the moment, for example, for Davis Cup. Who do you play if you haven't got Leighton there? But look, he's ready. He's ready to stop playing, and to move into this particular area.
Just on the back of that, because he announced it so early, I imagine the mindset had started to shift. But at any time during 2015, has that gone back the other way ever so slightly to, gee, maybe I could do one more year, maybe I've gone a bit early here?
Well, we've all suggested it to him, but he hasn't balked from it. Mm. He's made his decision, and once Leighton's made his mind up, that's it. So it's good. He's ready, which is the perfect timing.
There are, you know, I mean, these players, I guess the players that I grew up watching, you know, and they gradually retire and retire. Who are the next great characters in the game, Dreiser?
On the tour?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what it's going to be like once you haven't got Rafa and Roger and, you know, Novak seems to polarise people a little bit, so I wouldn't put him up there in the same class. But coming through, it's a difficult one. I think that's where Nick Kyrgios is really exciting. You got a young guy like him. You got Coric, the young fella, and you know that Dimitriov era. There's no one, Raonic, no one really comes through that's got a great personality that people are going to jump on and say, you know, I love this guy. At the moment, if you go anywhere in tennis in Australia and you talk to kids, they just love Nick Kyrgios. So even Leighton's son idolises him. So you know that's. He's a very attractive to the younger audience.
Because you've managed Leighton across such a long period, so you've been through periods where, as you even touched on a little bit before, you know, Leighton wasn't as popular with the public as he is now, where there's this great love for him. It's a bit like Andre Agassi, who sort of had two careers as an elder statesman. We'd love listening to him in the press conferences at Melbourne Park, and he won into his 30s and had some great success. But I imagine from your own perspective, as someone that's lived and breathed it, the whole journey with him, it must be nice that he finishes with so many people adoring and really appreciating what he's done.
Oh, there's no doubt about that, Brett. I think it's fantastic. He's going to be recognised for the achievements that he's made. A lot of that was coming down to people getting to know Leighton,
yeah,
and Leighton allowing people to know him. And I think that he's got a lot better, a lot more open. His commentary certainly helped, that people say, oh, you know, he actually knows a fair bit about the game. He doesn't seem too bad a bloke. He's got a gorgeous wife and three great kids. Mm. And part of that maturing as a person and becoming a father, I think that it changes people a little bit, whereas, you know, 18, 19, he was that focused on what he wants to do, where he wants to go, that, you know, the side to it, the media side to it, he couldn't care less about. And so it's about people actually knowing him now. And he's a great guy.
Yep.
Could people in general just, you know, there's so much expected of these kids when they first come through, and they are kids, you know, sometimes they're 16 or 17 years old. And there's all this expectation that they conduct themselves like the elder statesmen of the sport. Do you think people could do with cutting kids a bit more slack, some of the younger ones? Or do you think that, you know, by 18, it's time to grow up and they just have to work out what's what?
I think a lot depends on the individual. And the thing with tennis is it is an individual sport. So you can't hide. You can't hide in a team environment. You're out there. You're front and centre. And social media today it makes it really tough on these guys. And, you know, you wonder what it would have been like if social media was around when Leighton was 19 or 20 and Roger Federer was 19, 20, because he was not the best guy going around at that time. So, you know, that's got a lot to play with it. It's a changing environment. And so you've got to work with people and not work against people. And again, because it's an individual scenario, you fall back onto your family more than anything else. And that's why there's so many parents involved in tennis, because they're the constant all the way through your career. So you've got to work with people and not work against people and allow people to mature.
David Drysdale with us, the manager of Leighton Hewitt here on the First Serve. Being in that tennis bubble, David, for so long, many of us don't get to walk those corridors. I mean, CJ knows lots, and she can't say enough on there.
Sure, I do.
Give the general listener into SE and give us a bit of your own take on just life on tour.
It's not as glamorous as what everybody thinks it is. You're lucky you get to travel around the world. You get to some amazing places. But all you really see is tennis courts and restaurants and hotels, and you could be anywhere in the world. But it is a bubble. There's no doubt about it. The people it's a work environment, and it's like people going into the office. It's just that office travels around everywhere, and there's people there that are well known around the world. You know, there's always a bit of fun going on between certain people. There's always issues. There's politics. It's no different to a normal work environment. It's just a glamorous view from the outside, but at the same time, I've been very, very fortunate and very lucky to be part of it.
How do players best, I guess, prepare themselves for life after that? Because, you know, that bubble often, you know, the top players certainly don't always have to do a lot for themselves. You know, they have people doing things. They're very used to, you know, the car picking them up, the car dropping them off, everything flows, there's food, there's this, there's that. You know, how do you prepare yourself to retire from that?
Well, again, it's probably down to the individual the situations that they're in. I mean, I think it's great when I see Leighton having to, you know, take the kids to school in the morning and things like that, and going to parent teacher and doing the normal things that we all do with families. So, and then there's other times where they get invited to things that nobody else gets invited to, and they get given everything. But look, it's all about balance. And it's, again, it's the people that are around you and the people that you rely on. And if they've got good balance of people around you who keep you in reality, I don't think you'll have any problems.
So what about for yourself and your relationship with Leighton post him actually playing? Does that management arrangement just stay as it is? Would you look personally to take on any other young Australian players who are coming through?
Yeah, look, there's still going to be plenty of work to do with Leighton and Beck. And I will stay with them at this stage, and we will probably look at taking on some other Aussie kids if they want us to do that. Mm. A lot of the big management companies sign everyone up when they're 15 or 16 years of age, which I'm not totally in favour of. But look, we'll keep our eyes and ears open, and you know, if there's something promising coming along. But at the moment, you know, my job is to make sure that Leighton's transition goes through nicely when he finishes, that he's busy, he's doing things, and so I'll be busy enough with that.
Will he come back and settle more in Australia? Obviously, he's got his base over there in the Bahamas. How will that sort of arrangement
He'll continue work? To reside in the Bahamas at this stage, because if he's still going to be a fair bit on the tour, then it's easier to travel to events. But he will be spending time in Australia as well.
Okay, I want to ask a ridiculous hypothetical. So, would it be better for Leighton to draw someone like Roger or Rafa or Novak in the first round at the Australian Open, or would it be better for him to have a longer run, you know, maybe a slightly easier first round match? You know, easier path.
Jimmy Connors type run,
you know,
at the US Open.
No, I'm interested. I like this. I like the speculation.
I would like him to stay in the tournament as long as possible, and that if there is a match that's going to be his last match, if it's against a Roger or a Rafa, someone where there's a lot of mutual respect, I think that would be wonderful for Leighton.
Yeah, it's exciting. Gee, it's 3 months
exciting.
Away.
It
adds a great dimension to the Australian Open next year. David, really appreciate you coming in. You're always good enough every year to pop in and have a chat to us. A huge build-up. He'll be obviously part of the AO series and then his last Australian Open. And then we look forward to the captaincy with a big tie against the US on Australian soil, which is going to be outstanding in the early part of next year. Really appreciate you coming in, and good luck.
Thanks very much, Brett. Thanks, Charlotte. Thanks for having you.
David Drysdale, the manager of Leighton Hewitt, 77 days, 22 hours, 24 minutes, CJ, until the Australian Open. We'll come back. A bit of tennis to cover on the other side here on the first serve.
On 11:16 SEN, you're listening to The First Serve, talking tennis, building up to the Australian Open 2016.
22 minutes to midday, Brett Phillips and Charlotte James. Great to catch up with David Drysdale, and we'll be hearing plenty, CJ, about Leighton Hewitt in the next 3 or 4 months. I know TA have got different things organised. Different things will be trip fed out in the next few months as to how they're going to honour Leighton at the Australian Open, but let's hope he does go on an amazing run. That'd be fantastic.
Oh, it would just be so incredible if he just went on one last tear, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. Just the men overnight. Swiss indoors, the final tonight. How about this? A real treat, CJ. It's going to be Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal. Their 34th meeting. Haven't met for a couple of years, though. It's
21
a bit of a drought.
Months.
Exactly.
And everybody thought it was going to happen, didn't they? And finally.
Nadal, 23-10, that head-to-head. He defeated Richard Gasquet overnight, and Federer defeated Jack Sock. And the final in Valencia will be Joao Souza, who's had a pretty good year, the world number 46, risen up the rankings, taking on Roberto Bautista Agut. That'll be the final coming up. He defeated Steve Johnson in the semis. Of course, the girls are in Singapore. It is the WTA finals. And the final later on today will be Petra Kvitova taking on Agnieszka Radwanska. Matt Trelope, of course, staff writer for Australian Tennis Magazine, jetting around the globe a bit this year. Matt, he joins us from a beautiful part of the world. Matt, welcome. Big final coming up tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. Hi, Brent. Hi, Charlotte. Thanks for having me. Yeah, it is a big final, but it's an unexpected one. Coming into the semi-finals, everyone thought that it would be Maria Sharapova and Garbiñe Muguruza probably making the final because they went undefeated in round-robin play. But yesterday in the semi-finals, they were outplayed by two players who were very capable, and now we have the final that we do. So it's certainly not what we expected, and maybe not exactly what the fans were hoping for, but I think it'll actually be a really good final in its own right between two players that are very good at this stage of a tournament.
Matt, I'm going to play devil's advocate here. How valid do you think that the WTA final is without Serena Williams playing this tournament?
Yeah, that's a question that a lot of people have asked, and it definitely has lacked somewhat without Serena there because of her star power, her standard. She's the standard bearer on the tour this year. And she's the player that everyone's kind of looking up to. So without her there, it definitely has a hole in the event, perhaps. But I suppose, on the other hand, you do get to kind of see a landscape in women's tennis post-Serena Williams. And because Serena's 34, she probably won't be around for that much longer. So we are going to, I suppose we have to acknowledge that there will be a time where she's not playing. So this is kind of a bit of a window into a post-Serena tennis landscape. And on the whole, it's been really good. I mean, there are superstars here in Singapore. There's Sharapova, yep. There's Kvitova, who's won Wimbledon twice, and Muguruza's a star of the future, and Halep's very popular. And they've all been great matches. So it certainly has been a really entertaining event, and the fans have embraced it. But yeah, it does miss Serena.
Matt, obviously we've seen Maria Sharapova come back her first week back since Wimbledon, 5-1 up against Kvitova in the second set after losing the first 6-3. It looked like that was going to go to 3. We've been used to seeing the usual fight from Maria. How have you looked at her week being back on the tour?
Yeah, she kind of came into the event with a very much like, I've got nothing to lose mentality. She just wanted to get matches. It was all about just getting onto the court for the 3-round-robin matches and seeing how she'd do. And I think she surpassed her own expectations and everybody else's. She showed few signs of rust, and she played some excellent tennis. And there were some matches, particularly against Halep, where she beat her in straight sets. It was a great level of tennis, and she it really just looked like she hadn't been away. So when she came into the semi-finals, I think everyone had her penciled in for the title because of her experience and the fact that she'd won every match. But she said yesterday in press herself that she probably just took her foot off the gas a little bit when she was up 5-1. And that might come down to a little bit of, like, you know, lack of match play and the fact that she hasn't been in those kind of tough situations many times since Wimbledon. And of course, Kvitova is one of those players that she definitely came good herself when she... when she starts to zone and everything goes in, she's tough to stop. And Maria said as much. So, yeah, it was a bit of a shock, but I think it's probably more just a temporary setback for Maria rather than anything too much to worry about.
Matt, there's been a lot of talk about Muguruza since she reached the final at Wimbledon. You know, the last 6 months of this year, everybody's been talking about her, all eyes on her, you know, as a potential kind of future world number one, you know, the chosen one. Having watched her for a week, how would you assess her game, her potential, her ability?
She's excellent, I think, watching her. I think the thing that struck me a lot about her is because she's very aware of all of that talk surrounding her. Everyone in press asks her, you know, are you the future number one? Is are you the one that's going to come out and dominate? And I suppose it's a lot of pressure to put on a player, but she seems to take it all in her stride. She's very calm. She's very measured. She's very relaxed. And she's got a good ability to kind of just tune it out. She's very focused and intense on the court. So I don't think she kind of listens to any of that external stuff. And when she plays, there's so many weapons in her game that signal that she will be a good player in the future. She's got the great serve, the really big, heavy ground game. She actually covers the court pretty well for a big player. And she's pretty handy up at the net because she's also here in the doubles tournament and she's in the final. So she's getting plenty of practice up at the net with her volleys and combining that way. So, yeah, all of the ingredients are definitely there. And the players have commented that it's not so much her power and her weapons, but it's the fact that she consistently applies them. She doesn't kind of dip in and out like Kvitova does. She is relentless and consistent, and she's quite a presence that way. So, no, I think there's a lot of upside for her.
Matt, you have been tweeting from Singapore for the Australian Tennis Magazine. How can people follow?
They can follow by going to @OzTennisMag. That's the handle. And yeah, hopefully following all the coverage, we've been covering all of the singles and with finals day today, we'll also be covering the doubles. So if you like the WTA finals, it's the place to go.
Great stuff. And speaking of doubles, Martina Hingis, Sonja Mertzer, how good are they going to their 10th final this year? She is making more money out of her career now, CJ, than what she was making back in the late 90s. It is a great story, a career of two. Thanks, Matt. Enjoy the final. Should be a beauty later tonight. Really appreciate the chat.
Thanks very much for having me.
Matt Trelope, their staff writer for the Australian Tennis Magazine. Well, as we know, just with our chat with Matt there in Singapore, the tennis is booming in Asia. And in January of this year, the WTA unveiled its 13th tournament in the region, the WTA Elite Trophy in Zhuhai in China. It's an annual event that will feature both singles and doubles. It's going to be staged right through to 2019. So basically, the players that have missed out, being the top eight in Singapore this week, the next batch of players from 9 to 20 play for some very good prize money. Peter Johnston, formerly of Tennis Australia, the WTA, who's now running his own sports consultancy business, one of his tasks is to be the tournament director in a booming part of the tennis world, and he joins us live from China this morning. Hi, Peter.
Morning, Brett.
Good to talk to you. This is a good field you've got this week. Very good prize money. As we know, the top 20 in women's tennis, very decent tennis players. And for those that have missed out on the prestigious top eight, they've still got plenty to play for.
Well, that's right, Brett. And it's turned out to be really quite a colourful, interesting field because Venus Williams is the headliner, and we've got some former number ones, some Grand Slam champions, and top 10 players. So it's a really great mix, and I think we're, as you just mentioned, it's a new tournament, a new format of four groups of three round robin, and yeah, look, it's big money, $2 million US in the singles, and 700 ranking points, so it can still affect the year-end top 10. So it's really an important tournament on the tour.
Peter, as part of your role in tennis, you've spent quite a bit of time in Asia the last few years, and I just said those numbers are the increasing tournament. So there clearly is an appetite for more tennis in that part of the world.
Very much so, Brett. And this one particularly, it's Zhuhai is a new city for tennis, obviously, and built an amazing new stadium. And actually, you know, we just use the word new a lot here because it's a new city. The whole city itself is being... there was an old part of Zhuhai, and now this whole new area, which is connected by a small bridge, and in some cases you can walk over to Macau, and there's a 50-kilometre bridge being built from Hong Kong over to here. So they're very keen, the appetite's very strong to put themselves on the global map, and tennis is always a great vehicle for that. To, you know, we've got good international television coverage and the profile of the players. So that's kind of the formula that leads to a city like this getting involved in tennis.
So what sort of indication, Peter, are you getting in terms of ticket sales? Is it people booking those early, or people who walk up and sample who mightn't have seen a lot of live tennis?
Well, I think the great thing with this one is we've got sold-out sessions. We've still got tickets for sale in certain sessions, but you know, I think it's one thing the players are going to enjoy is that there's going to be full houses. And look, it's the end of pretty long year for the girls, and so we're trying to keep it pretty relaxed, and they've all come in here in different ways. They've caught ferries from Hong Kong and flown into Macau and through the border and all these ways, so you know, it's trying to keep it as a pretty pretty relaxed sort of week, and I think really nice way to end the season.
Absolutely. We're talking to Peter Johnston in Zhuhai in China. Of course, the WTA Elite Trophy following the, of course, tournament in Singapore, which concludes later on today. So when you're negotiating in terms of timing, obviously you've got the top women, the top eight this week, followed by this tournament. How do those discussions sort of go down in terms of trying to, you know, find a place in the calendar for it?
Well, that's interesting the way it evolves, because Zhuhai, and what does happen with different cities around the world, whether it's here or elsewhere, that, you know, either a city or a promoter will put their hand up for it that they want to get on the tour, whether it's the men's or the women's. But then the challenge is always the date. And I think with this one, there was where do you put it? And at the same time was this appetite where the depth is really increasing for in women's tennis, and you know, when Singapore only has 1 to 8, that there was still an opportunity to create a new event, and so, but it had to be a little different. So hence the four groups of three, which I really love. I think groups of three in round robin really really works well, and so it had to be almost like I think the word bespoke or designed especially to sort of cater for what could work in the year end.
And I see you've got Linara as an ambassador who's obviously still playing a really pivotal role in the development and growth of the sport that she excelled at.
That's right, and she'll be, you know, she's come down a few times this year, and she'll be doing the presentations on the final day. So, you know, with hopefully a little reunion for her when she sees Venus and Caroline Wozniacki and Jelena Jankovic and a bunch of players that, I mean, she's so recently retired that a lot of them are her still her peers. So it's been great to have her as part of the whole sort of promotion of the event to help it sort of jump out of the box and be something a little bit extra special.
And Peter, just as I wrap up for you personally, I mean, you're well known obviously here in Melbourne, ran Tennis Australia circles for a long time. You branched out on your own this year. I think you're involved recently in the tournament, in managing that in St. Petersburg into this tournament. How's it all faring for you?
It's been an interesting year because I did the men's in St. Petersburg, which was just after US Open, and that was great. Had to do a couple of months in Russia this year, and a lot of time up here in Zhuhai, particularly with both of these events. They're sort of first timers and sort of need a lot of extra attention. But it goes well, and I guess can't complain. Pretty that but I'm busy. I just love getting back to Melbourne when I can.
Yeah, look forward to seeing you hopefully in our studios sometime over the summer. Good luck this week. We'll perhaps touch base next Sunday on the program when we know who the finalists are going to be, and hope it's a really successful week for you.
Thanks, Brett. And it is on Fox Sports, so hopefully get good coverage this week there in Australia.
Great stuff. Peter Johnston, the tournament director of the WTA Elite Trophy in Zhuhai in China. It's a little skip across from Hong Kong, Macau, anyone that knows that area very well. Plenty of money in that region, and a great field this week led by Venus Williams, Carla Suarez, Navarro, Pliskova, Vinci, Wozniacki, Irani, Madison Keys, some of the best players in the game.
On 11.16 SEN, you're listening to The First Serve, talking tennis, building up to the Australian Open 2016.
Welcome back to The First Serve. Don't forget, of course, Sunday Sports Central coming up after midday. We've gone through the men's, CJ, in terms of the ATP World Tour. Federer and Nadal tonight in Basel. It'll be Souza and Gut who will play the Valencia Open final. And the Paris Masters, of course, starts this week, and Bernard Tomic has drawn Fabio Fognini in the first round. The final 1,000 Masters event for the year, where Novak Djokovic will be the top seed. But closer to home, Danny Terolgan, big challenger this week. And the two top seeds have got through to the final, Matthew Ebden and Jordan Thompson. Paul Aiken, normally in here with us, it just feels a little bit vacant today. Has been on the road watching the majority of this tournament during the week. He's heading up to Canberra, where they play the next challenger event. Morning, Paul.
Good morning, CJ and Brett, and good to hear that you two are playing nicely without me.
Yeah, no, it's
we're pining.
Well. Straight cool. Sets today, 6-3, 6-4. Take us through how you expect this final to be played today. It starts around about 5 minutes' time, in fact, at noon, weather pending.
Yeah.
But Matty Ebden at 128 in the world, Thompson at 164. So it's a big tournament to get some really valuable rankings points.
Absolutely, and the one thing that I love about these tournaments and just watching them before the Australian Open is that someone inevitably will come through and have a good year next year, comes out of this group. And we saw it with John Millman, of course, last year. But as far as the final is concerned, Ebden versus Thompson, I'm really unsure about who will win this. Ebden, of course, he's won two challenges this year. He mixes up his game, serves and volleys a bit, slices and dices. We'll keep Jordan guessing. Jordan's a little bit more predictable, plays from the back of the court so well, improving all the time. I'm really not sure who'll win this, but if I was pressed, I'll probably say Ebden. But Thompson coming off a runner-up in, I think, Vietnam, beating Duckworth earlier in that tournament a couple of weeks ago, so playing very well.
It's a breezy day down here, Paul. How much is the weather going to play a part in this final, do you think?
Well, when I was there last week with my charge, one day was windy, then one day was beautiful. It really is a mixed bag. If it gets windy down there, it is just horrendous. So I think wind will play a part in it. I think that would probably favour someone like Ebden, who's very smart in those sort of conditions, but it'll be interesting. And next week, of course, the Canberra leg is on, and top seed there is John Millman, so that will be exciting to see him in play. And just out of interest, Marinko Matosevic played in Terolgan last week, which is a bit of a come down for him after the 3 years that he's had.
The Mad Dog. I think he lost lost first round to Benny Mitchell, 6-3, 6-1. I think he's in the doubles final today,
yeah,
the Mad Dog.
Just won, mate. So
okay.
He just won that. So he and partner Dane Kelly.
Right, yeah.
So that will please him. And next week, it's a fairly similar draw with the inclusion of John Millman. So very interesting.
Yeah, it's a good field. Good to see Johnny come back and play a challenger here in Australia, because you know, that's where he's come from.
Well, that,
CJ.
Yeah, that's right.
He's
got those points to defend from last year. He won that tournament, which was a double in Terolgan.
See, Bryden Klein was actually in this draw as well.
Yes.
Former Aussie player who plays for Great Britain now. Where's his game now, Paul?
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, Charlotte. He, to me, has been a guy that's sort of ran up and down on the spot for a few years. But he's maturing with his game. He beat Omar Jasika the first round, which was a very good win. And Jasika, interestingly enough, has got Ebden in the first round next week. So it doesn't get any easier.
No, it certainly doesn't, mate. Time on the fly here. Good luck in Canberra. Exciting place, Canberra. Make sure you go out and sample some of the nightlife as well.
I will indeed. I don't know whether it's changed
so
in the last 20 years, but it should be fun.
So supportive.
Thanks, Paul. Good work.
Cheers.
Paul Aiken. Bye. And good news to finish, because our man is just continuing his great run. Victor Estrella Burgos of the Dominican Republic, through to the final, the Monterrey Open over there in beautiful Mexico. He is just having a stellar career post the age of 30.
That's good. It's hope for us all.
We love him. If Leighton can't get on a run at the Australian Open, let's hope Victor does.
Yeah, I'm crossing everything.
Yeah, can you imagine those Dominican flags and the crowd? It'd be great. Okay. Thanks, CJ.
We're going now.
Nice work. Bye.